Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in to the NOLA Drinks Show, friends, this week. I appreciate it as always. Yes, here we are in a post-Jazz Fest world here in New Orleans. I'm sure a lot of you out there are sad, and I'm sure a lot of you out there are glad. Yeah, always an interesting time around town when Jazz Fest is going on. It's always interesting just to see the different crowds, the different events attract. And, you know, Jazz Fest is always, you know, a lot of locals go, of course. I'm sure a lot of you, if you're from the area or if you're a New Orleans fan listening to the show outside the area, maybe even came to town or do come to town for Jazz Fest. But it's always a lot of, folks from different parts of the country, different parts of the world that are here for Jazz Fest. And, it's always just interesting to interact and observe. A lot of my friends there in the service industry, I know, are usually pretty happy when it's over. Hopefully they've lined their pockets with some good tip money and things like that. But people are usually pretty much ready for things to kind of be done. And this is sort of the time, friends, when we slide, as I like to say, the long, slow death march to August. Starting a little hotter, a little more humid. Still waiting for that first time that I get out of the car with the AC cranked and my sunglasses fogged up. That hasn't happened yet, but I think it's coming pretty quick. But things kind of start to slow down here a little bit on multiple fronts. Now, that'll lead me into what we're doing on today's show, because it is still technically festival season, and maybe you might want to say that Jazz Fest and so on is maybe sort of the high water mark, and there's not a whole lot that happens after. I'm going to put it that way. I'm a French Quarter Fest guy, just saying, you know that for the record. But we start to kind of slow down. There's definitely a lot of festivals still to come. Top Taco's coming up in a couple weeks, for example, on May 16th, I believe it is. And if you get a chance, go check that event out. They got rained out. It was supposed to be in early March, and so they postponed it here to mid-May. And I believe there's still tickets available. I'll be out there cocktail judging, as I have done for the previous two, as we now move into the third one. I think it's the third one. Is that right? Yep. And looking forward to doing that very much. So come out and say hi. Check out Top Taco. The website is toptaconola.com, by the way. Point is, we still have some of that, festival stuff coming up. And what we're doing on today's show is a show that I've wanted to do for a while, talking about festivals. Sort of the landscape, what it means to the culture, what it means to the economy, how we have now, as I've learned, I thought it was about 130 or so official festivals in the city of New Orleans alone. It's now probably 140. Which equates to about three a day. But one of the things that we know here, and why we're talking about this during this particular season, is really we have two shortened seasons, truncated seasons, if you will, appropriate for festivals, which are, of course, the spring and the fall. Now, that's not to say there's not festivals all year round, because there are. But you might just say, well, there's not really one every 3 days, is there? Well, there's really kind of not. What really ends up happening in these shortened seasons is we end up having three festivals on a given Saturday, and then we go into the summer months where maybe there's not so much going on, and certainly in the winter months, a lot of holiday stuff, but not quite as much going on. But to that end, what we're doing is we're actually over at our good friend's place, Sylvain, as they hosted us kindly this time, 625 Charter Street, which I mention frequently, but go check them out. We're joined by Emily Madero, who is the executive director of French Quarter Festival, French Quarter Festivals Incorporated, I should say. Also Christian Saunier of New Orleans & Company, which is our Convention and Visitors Bureau. That's what they used to be called, but they changed the name to New Orleans & Company recently. And Cleveland Spears, who is the founder and executive director of the National Fried Chicken Festival. And they share their insights into running festivals. I think both the National Fried Chicken Festival just had its third year not too long ago. French Quarter Festival just had its 36th installment very recently. And so both these festivals pull in locals, both these festivals pull in people from outside the area. So a lot of perspective to share there. And then Christian helps us understand a lot of some of the tourism impacts and economic impacts of festivals around the city. So that's what we're talking about on the show today. Friends, quick programming note, going to be taking a week off next week. Need a little bit of a break. Got some housekeeping to do, that sort of thing. We'll be back with a new show in a couple weeks. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drinks Show. We're going to head over to Sylvain for our featured interview, talking festivals. Come on back. ¶¶ All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week, as always. Yeah, we're here at our good friend's place, Sylvain, 625 Charter Street, right in the French Quarter. And we're talking festivals because it's festival season. And I'm pleased to be joined by three great guests here to talk about that today. First off, Cleveland Spears from the National Fried Chicken Festival. Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for making some time. I appreciate it. Also, Christian Saunier from New Orleans and Company, formerly the artist known as the CVB, Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Thanks, Brian.
My pleasure. My pleasure for having you here and to have you here. And Emily Madero, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And you are the executive director of French Quarter Festival.
Indeed.
And many other things that we'll get to. Well, let's Christian, let's start with you here, because coming from New Orleans and Company, which is our Convention and Visitors Bureau, as I mentioned, you guys are kind of in charge of gathering all that data that tells us a lot about tourism. And here in New Orleans, as you just told me, I thought we had 130 official festivals. We're now up to probably about 140.
About 140. It's hard to keep track of them all, but we're pegging it at about 140, which is roughly every 3 days there's a festival.
Right. Now, we were talking about this, too, before we went on the air, that that's sort of what the, you know, if we average these out, it's every 3 days. But since we have kind of a shorter couple windows, spring and fall, where people really want to have their festivals, although we've got them going on year-round.
Yeah.
We've got a lot going on, so sometimes there are two or three festivals on a given Saturday.
They're compressed in the spring, so any festival you say yes to, you've probably said no to three or four others.
Right, and that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And what, in your view, then, we were talking a little bit about this, we don't see that volume, especially per capita, that we have in New Orleans, probably anywhere in the country, as far as having that number of festivals. How, in your view, how do we support that?
Well, first, you're right, and it's funny that you mention that, because we travel all over the place promoting the city, and we talk to our peers, people that do the same thing we're doing in other cities, and they're astounded at the number of festivals that we have, and they're astounded at the ease of which they are organically born and attended. And other festivals our size, it takes a lot of resources and a lot of energy to stand up a festival and have it become popular. In New Orleans, there's this phenomenon where there seems to be an endless appetite for festivals. New festivals are happening all the time. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. But
yeah.
But to answer your question, we do try to support some new festivals. You know, our job is not to sponsor festivals. That's not really the job. But there are some festivals like Cleveland's, for instance, that occur during need periods. So we can support festivals like that to get them on their feet to make sure that they're viable and can walk and then
survive,
run on their
make
own
in the second year.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it. Well, let me flip this to you, Emily, and I'm going to ask you the same question too, Cleveland. What are your insights? I mean, Emily, you've French Quarter Festival, you guys just enjoyed a record-breaking year, your 36th iteration of the festival.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people that come out. I mean, how, in your view, how do we continue to support all these festivals, and French Quarter Festival in particular?
Well, I think first and foremost, the reason why there are so many festivals and that they're successful here in New Orleans is it's so born of our culture. That's how we celebrate. People come together around food and music. It's very natural. So the fact that locals embrace it first, usually, and that it has, as Christian said, so many of these festivals start small and grow organically. And that's just how French Quarter Festival started. You know, we were a very, very small locals-only effort to bring people back into the French Quarter in 1984 after the World's Fair construction. But when you have a good thing, word tends to travel, and we love to come together to celebrate our unique music and our culture. And so I think that that's something that's grown in popularity with locals first and regionally. But usually if it's something that's celebrated by the people here in New Orleans, it's worthwhile, and our visitors want to come and enjoy it as well.
Yeah, right, and that's what it's grown into. Well, in Cleveland, with your case, now you've just done your third iteration of the National Fried Chicken Festival. How is that working? And I mean, and you are drawing people not only locally, you've expanded, but you draw in a lot of people from around the country.
Yeah, you know, we've been just very pleased with the support, and like Emily said, first from locals. And when we started the process of conceiving it, you know, one of the questions we asked this focus group is, does New Orleans have festival fatigue? And this was back in 2015.
Okay, yeah.
And everyone in the focus group said, absolutely not. We love festivals here. But what we've been able to do is create something. When we thought of the idea, we thought it was America's favorite food. We thought it was something that activated people regardless of all the other barriers of age, race, income, sexual orientation, geography, anything like that. We just believed it was something that everyone loved. So we felt like we could pull together a diverse group of people around this dish that everyone can relate to and tell stories about, from their grandmother making it to their mom making it, the mom teaching them how to make it, things like that. And then we kind of took and built off that. We had, you know, this overwhelming response in the first year. And wanted to capitalize off that, we kind of rebranded it to the National Fried Chicken Festival and said, you know what, let's see if we can build a competition around national bragging rights around this iconic dish. And since then, we've been able to continue to be really supported by locals. And by locals, we mean the state of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And then really inviting folks in from the rest of the country to kind of help come and participate in everything that is New Orleans, our food, our music, our culture. And, you know, it's been a good run thus far, and we're looking to continue to grow it and make it, you know, we aspire to be like my friend Emily here with the French Quarter Festival.
That's a good place to aspire to be, I think. Yeah. Well, Christian, let me ask you this question. Let's kind of pull back a little bit here. Let's talk in general sense, and people who listen to the show regularly, we talk a lot about this, that we talk about the tourism economy here, how that's the backbone of the New Orleans economy, and that's largely built, as you were saying before we went on the air, on culture. And really what we mean is food, drink, hospitality, music, I think, is kind of forms the basis of that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously a good convention business as well. What are some of the numbers that we look at when we talk about tourism in a broad sense in the city?
So for 2017, we switched our data analysis from UNO to DK Shiflett, mainly to achieve parity with our peer cities. We didn't disagree with what UNO was doing. It was just that none of our other peer cities were using their research. We were the outlier by using them. What we found is there's correlation between what UNO's data was telling us, the number of people that come here for our festivals. I think they had us at 25% of our then 11 million visitors were coming for festivals.
Okay. Yeah.
DK Shiflett in 2017 is when we made the switch, and they broke things down a little differently because their methodology varies a bit, but the correlation was the same. Culture is the bucket that captures our festival goers, and according to DK Shiflett, 51% of our visitors come here for culture. And within culture are festivals. Mm-hmm. And DK Shiflett's numbers say that 17 million people visit us in 2018.
Okay. And if we take that number, the 25% or so, which seems people might go, wow, 25% of people come here end up at a festival. And as we were joking about at the beginning, we have so many festivals, as I was joking with you all, that people are going to stumble into one.
That's right. It might not have been the reason for their visit, but they experienced one once they got here.
Right, right, exactly. Now, Emily, with you all, 36th annual just completed French Quarter Festival, and I mentioned record-breaking. You had 825,000 people. Is that right?
We did. Yes, that's what we estimate. And, you know, again, that usually is about 50% local, 50%. And by local, we mean state of Louisiana and regional, and 50% out-of-town visitors. We work with UNO Hospitality Research Center to help us with our economic impact numbers and whatnot. So we don't have that information yet. But part of the reason why we're bringing all those people here to celebrate is to drive local music and to be able to support the 1,700 musicians that play on those stages.
I have a lot of respect for what you do because last year, for example, when you all lost the Saturday, so it's a 4-day festival now, just for listeners who don't know, lost a Saturday because of weather. Everybody still, from my understanding, everybody still got paid, and the musicians and such, and that you also gave priority to rebooking those bands this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we are a 4-day free festival, and as I'm sure everybody here understands, the economics of hosting a big free festival are sort of upside down. The more people you have, your expenses grow, mm-hmm. and you know, revenue doesn't always keep up. But I think for us, you know, our founding mission is twofold. It's really to drive positive economic impact here in the French Quarter and in New Orleans, and then also do that specifically by celebrating our local culture and our local musicians. So it didn't feel right not to honor that, and that was our first priority in closing out the festival. And, you know, it was absolutely the right thing to do. I think the festival did well, and the musicians, we rely on them to continue to create the incredible music that bring people here every year. And we were thrilled that so many were able to come back in 2019.
There was some good stuff. We'll get into that too. Cleveland, do me a favor. Would you describe, because you just had your third festival, as we touched on, Can you talk a little bit about your growth trajectory? And I know you mentioned this first year, you know, getting off the ground, there's some growing pains. And then now where you're at after 3 years, how many people did you have this last time? And kind of walk us through.
Absolutely. So in 2015, we had the idea of creating it. And we said, you know, let's do this festival in Lafayette Square, and maybe we'll get about 10,000 people to come out. And in the first year, we did this festival in Lafayette Square, and we had 40,000 people come out. And which overwhelmed downtown. It overwhelmed Lafayette Square. And, you know, we made the decision almost immediately as people were still complaining about our long lines on Facebook. The next day after the festival, I reported to the city and to the press that the festival would come back. We'd make it 2 days. And we also made the decision to move it to where our aspirational pier is, Waldenburg, making us the only other major festival that takes up all of Waldenburg Park. So we moved it to Waldenburg in 2017 and as well as 2018. In year two, in 2017, we grew from 40,000 to 160,000.
Wow.
And then last year, in 2018, we clicked 175,000 people in and out of the park over the two-day weekend. We want to continue to grow it. We want to be aggressive. We are currently evaluating and considering the feasibility of adding a third day to the festival this year. So that is something that could happen as soon as the 2019 festival. We're in the final phase of our decision-making process around that. We want to continue to kind of elevate the experience. We do a lot of things out there. You know, people come for the food, they come for the music, but we have things like, you know, football viewing areas. We have a giant kids and family lounge. We have games and things like that out there. So we want to continue to think, how can we continue to be creative around it? Yes, it's the Fried Chicken Festival, but what can we add to the experience that makes it that much more dynamic? We're going to continue to push our chefs to be very creative about their uses of fried chicken. We don't want a whole bunch of wings and french fries. It's not the type of festival we're trying to do.
Right.
But we want these really unique, creative culinary utilizations of fried chicken. So folks that have done things like fried chicken quesadillas and fried chicken tacos and fried chicken topped with this mango slaw and all of these really unique sweet and savory combinations that folks can come down and just get a really rich, well-rounded experience. People ask me every day, how many different ways can you cook fried chicken? I say, well, in the last 3 years, I've learned of about 100. So we're going to continue to grow as a race, to grow trajectory, considering adding a third day this year in 2019. We also want to just continue to elevate the culinary talent. So there's a handful of chefs that we've identified across the country that we have invitations out to come down to the Fried Chicken Festival. And sometimes chefs they're such a name that they don't have interest in coming down and running a food booth. But, you know, is there an opportunity to bring a chef down and have them do a demo on our cooking demo stage, and then there is a booth within the festival, and the proceeds from that booth goes to some culinary charity that they care about,
Great.
Things like that. So,
okay.
So we have some offers and invitations like that out currently to some great chefs from across the country. But we're just like French Quarter Fest. We want to – the bigger the festival is, the more we can further drive economic impact.
Okay, great.
And like Emily, that growth and the revenue generated from the growth doesn't always match up evenly. What I tell folks who aren't in this business is – I think the most expensive things are the things that people don't see. So the public safety line item or the sanitation line item and things like that. So you know, those are things that we just kind of have to thoughtfully and kind of smartly manage our way through. But we want to grow because we want to continue to bring people to New Orleans to celebrate New Orleans, and then ultimately continue to contribute to this economy that is so largely contingent on kind of hospitality, tourism, and that economy.
And culture, as Christian said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do this, y'all. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, and we're going to chat a little more. Does that work for you?
Sure. Sounds great.
It does.
Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, as always. Thanks for listening in. And we are talking festivals in New Orleans. Yeah, we got a few of those, as we've established here, about 140. And Christian, let me ask you this question. You mentioned this, and maybe tied in, because Cleveland touched on this too. You guys, your role is to support these entities, in part anyway, that's your role at New Orleans and Company. How do you guys go about, say, taking Cleveland's festival that's fairly new, maybe contrast that with French Quarter Festival? What is your role, and how do you support and nurture the situation?
Well, a lot of it is promotion. Our mission is to promote visitation to New Orleans. So we leverage all of the offerings that the city has to do that, including festivals. not to mention restaurants, hotels, green spaces, you know, sculpture gardens expanding, new children's museum. Like, all those things are tools in our toolbox that we can use to talk to editors and bloggers to write favorably about the city. So that's the main thing we can offer. That, to me, is our primary goal. Mm-hmm. It's not to write checks to festivals. Now, there are some festivals that we do support financially because they fit certain needs for us, need periods, certain demographics, and we want to have more.
And Christian, so when you say need periods, you mean maybe times a year that we're trying to boost tourism?
I'm talking about lower. Summer.
Summer.
You want to say need periods?
August, let's just September. Be straight about this, right?
Yeah. Okay. July, August, September are typically our slow months. So we do all sorts of things to drive visitation to the city then. There's a culinary program that's in its 15th year this year where we encourage locals, meaning people from Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, to come and have really affordable lunches, brunches, dinners at lower rates than usual. But back to the festivals. We're constantly on the road talking about our festivals and inviting journalists to come and experience our festivals so that they write favorably about it, and then we reach millions of people with news about our festivals.
Got it.
And it's very symbiotic in that, you know, hopefully we are producing events that they're able to leverage and invite folks down to enjoy and write about. And in so doing, our festivals get some earned media, mm-hmm. and it's a really wonderful way that we're able to really maximize our mm-hmm. outreach because we have very small nonprofit budgets, mm-hmm. so we really appreciate and lean on them in order to help amplify our voice.
Right. Now, Emily, you're a staff of nine, correct?
Yes.
And so when obviously it's and you bring in a whole bunch of other people, you don't just have nine people out there working a festival with 825,000 people. We're talking about public safety and all that. But so you bring in a bunch of other folks, but to, you know, just do all kinds of things. I see a lot of people driving around in golf carts doing important things with clipboards. I know, and they're not the nine of you that I know. But how do you manage that ramp up to growth to pull the festival off every year? It's remarkable to me.
Sure. Well, you know, I joined the festival. This year was my third. So I'm a relatively new member of the team, although I've been coming to the festival for 20 some odd years now. I haven't made it to all 36. But you know, we benefited from 36 years of organic growth. And something that I noticed right away is there really is this family. So many of our vendors and even our seasonal staff come back year after year after year. And that's a wonderful way, one, that we're able to relatively seamlessly scale up quickly and rely on folks to be good stewards of the festival and of the event. Because we've developed these long-term relationships, and so we're not dealing with a ton of turnover and training. Although that being said, when you go from, you know, a force of nine people to hundreds, certainly there's a ramp-up period. So, you know, what we say is we have nine departments of one, and we operate relatively leanly throughout the year. Of course, we host other events, but they're much smaller than French Quarter Festival. So we are planning and raising funds for and working on curating French Quarter Festival 12 months out of the year. But typically in the fall is when you'll start to see us ramp up, and each one of my main team members, you know, who is on the staff full time, operates an entire department, and they might bring one assistant on to support them in Q1 from January through April, and then that team grows depending on what department it is, you know, with contractors and staff members. So we really do expand to probably about 250, but of course we're really integrated also with city services. So unlike a lot of festivals where you might have a secure perimeter, for example, where it's ticketed and you enter in, we really are integrated into the French Quarter neighborhood itself. And so in doing, of course, we have our own private sanitation and security, as Cleveland is saying, which is a massive undertaking, but we're also very integrated with city services. So we work very closely with New Orleans Police Department, New Orleans Fire Department, New Orleans EMS, and there's hundreds of officers and first responders and other employees out there working with us as an integrated team to mm-hmm. keep the festival operations running smoothly and safely.
Got it. Great. Cleveland, what about with you guys? And because you've gone from 40,000 the first year, as you said, to 175 in the second year, and then 190, you said, in the third year?
160, then 175.
175, yes. Got it. So that's a significant leap. How do you guys manage this? Because obviously, I think maybe people don't realize that, that these are year-round efforts, right?
Absolutely.
And how do you ramp up, and how do you go about it?
So one thing, yes, we absolutely work on the National Fried Chicken Festival year-round, but what I do want to just give a moment of deference to Emily and her team. And being in this business the last couple of years, and what we also do is, you know, we have interviewed people to come work for us that have worked in some portion of French Quarter Festival as a contractor or something like that. The operation that team pulls off is truly, truly amazing. And I'm sitting across from candidates that's interviewing and work for me, and they're telling me about what they did at French Quarter Festival. And I'm like, so that's how it works? It's really, really amazing.
Cleveland is being modest, too, because he's out there helping us to execute as well. We're partners at the festival, at French Quarter Festival.
Oh, okay.
They really help us in a lot of ways with some of our most important activations.
Yes. Oh, okay. Cool.
I have worked on events before. The company owns a couple of other events. Our other events are smaller. We do an annual pop-up dinner party. It runs out about 4,000 or 5,000 people, called Dinner en Blanc. We've done events in other cities. So we've done some micro festivals for the last couple of years. I've never done anything as large as what the Fried Chicken Festival has become. I've never worked on it for anyone else, or I've never created it. So this has been a learning experience. And I think the best thing that happened for us was things going so poorly the first year. And poorly is a relative statement, because we had too many people, which is a problem a lot of people like to have. But it really forced us to really dig in and learn things early that ordinarily probably would not have thought of till later. So we put a lot of time into the logistics and the process and kind of have learned our way through it over the last couple years. So as it relates to the ramp-up period, we have a full-time events department of 3.5. So 3 folks that were director of events, event operations manager, and event producer. And myself, I'm the half. And then we're fortunate that it's in a company that's also an advertising and PR firm. So all of the marketing of the festival is run by our agency team. And then as we get closer to the festival, we scale up with contractors. So, you know, we'll have someone that'll work for us the month, a couple people that'll work for us the month of the festival, a couple people that'll work for us the week of the festival. And then the days of the festival, so once we start loading, the festival probably between, you know, the various companies we hire, it's a couple hundred people it takes to pull it off.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what our ramp up staffing operation looks like.
Got it. Great. Well, let's do this, guys. Let's since we're kind of at a pause here, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll do another segment here on the radio. And then these three are going to stick around and hang out for another shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast only portion. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drinks Show. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are talking festivals and the festival landscape here in New Orleans. And Christian, we were just talking about this during the break. A lot of good – this happens on the show all the time. We have all these great conversation during the break, and I'm going to hit record. But you were mentioning something, a piece of advice for listeners, and then let's kind of segue into some stuff that Emily and Cleveland were talking about how we do it here. But go ahead and give that piece of advice, if you would.
So to better appreciate how good we have it with our festivals here in New Orleans, I invite you to attend a festival outside of New Orleans or outside of Louisiana.
You're not getting a job with anybody else's tourism and marketing.
No, you're right. I should not be encouraging your listeners to leave New Orleans. But to get
they won't hire you after what you just said.
But it will give your listeners a newfound sense of appreciation of the quality of the festivals that we have in New Orleans. Because I've been to a few outside of New Orleans and Louisiana, and those people think they're having festivals. And then I come home and go to ours and say, they weren't having a festival.
Right. Well, Emily, in Cleveland, I'll have you chime in too. Why? Why is that the case here? Why do we do it better than anywhere else? I'll say it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think so many reasons, but just as we started the program with, I said, you know, I think it's so baked into our local culture that these festivals began organically. And, with live events becoming big business all throughout the country, you see a lot of marketing dollars being thrown into them. They grow very quickly, but they're somewhat hollow. You know, it's very commercialized. Where here, I think that there is this wonderful appreciation for culture, which Christian was speaking to, why this is why people visit this area. And of course, balanced with what Cleveland was saying, where, you know, we're constantly straddling sort of progress and preservation. So what do we want to celebrate about who we are and sort of our heritage, while at the same time pushing forward and innovating and continuing to sort of stay relevant on a broader platform? But I think that that happens here in this kind of wonderful, organic, honest way. And you'll also see so many of the festivals here are ultimately driven by nonprofits, and maybe that's because it's not such a good business to get into. We were talking about the economics earlier, but I also think that they are vehicles to come together. So they are sort of our reason for coming together as communities, as neighborhoods, to celebrate something we love, like fried chicken or whatever it may be, and not just necessarily a business model behind it.
Got it. Great points. Cleveland, let me ask you this question, and feel free to chime in on that too, but and I think you touched on this a little bit before. I think with one of the things, from my opinion, why festivals work well here, and you guys have all kind of said this, there's an authenticity to them. And how do you ask yourself that question, don't you, when you put on the festival every year? How do we keep it authentic?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And make sure that it fits the fabric here.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'll do is I want to just comment on what we'll say this far. One, I visit anytime I travel, and I see a festival going on while I'm there, I attend it because I'm in that business and I always want to learn. And they're quite underwhelming. And what I think it is it goes back to the culture of New Orleans. We take so much pride in gathering, in hosting others. And that is across our hospitality community. There are certain restaurants down here that you can go to, and you see waiters that have been there for 20 years, and they take great pride in serving others. So it's really a part of the culture of the people of New Orleans to put a lot of energy, effort, pride, and resources when you're inviting people to a place. If you're inviting someone to your home, it's the same thing. So it's really part of who we are in our DNA as Louisianians. To your question about authenticity, you know, it's interesting. One of the words we often use to describe our festival, which is centered around fried chicken, is authenticity, because it's one of those things that it is very authentic, and there's a lot of value in authenticity these days. And kind of when we were starting the process of creating this festival, we had to have these questions like, do I really want to be the guy doing the fried chicken festival? Because of other implications.
Got to be authentic to yourself, right?
And then we kind of got through. I was like, okay, I'm fine with it. But that, you know, we felt like there was nothing more authentic than that, because it removes kind of airs and things like that. And then what are the other ways you can find to be authentic throughout the process as well? So one thing I'll say that I want everyone to know. So we have the National Fried Chicken Festival. When our guests come out there, they will never see a chain restaurant out there selling chicken. Popeyes and Chick-fil-A and even our presenting sponsor, Raising Cane's, is not out there selling food. We look at our festival as a platform for up-and-coming chefs. And that is one of our kind of mantras of maintaining our authenticity. So folks have asked us, you're getting so big, are you going to start bringing in bigger name musical acts? Not really. You know, we want to have the best of Louisiana musicians. But those are things that we're doing to kind of maintain the authenticity of kind of what it feels like to be at our festival.
Okay, great. Well, you guys, we have about 4 minutes left. So a quick question, Christian. You guys have a lot that you have a lot of raw material to market here in New Orleans. How do you sort through that? You can't feature – if we have 140 festivals, you can't feature them all, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't want to limit ourselves.
Okay.
very ambitious.
Yeah. Well, we have so many things. We're fortunate. We have so many things to promote in the city. It depends on who we're working with. Our team really focuses on earning media exposure versus paying for ads.
Okay.
So our stock and trade is forming relationships with influencers and editors and writers for travel and lifestyle publications and blogs, and convincing them that the things that they should be writing about are in New Orleans.
So you like let them gravitate perhaps to what they want to cover also, and you steer them in the right direction?
Correct. Through getting to know them, we'll learn what they need to cover for their readers or what they personally like to do. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of faith in the city, You know, we've never run across an editor that's interested in something that we don't have something to offer. So we do steer a lot of them to our festivals. Right now, there's so many new developments in the city, from museums to green space to, of course, always restaurants and hotels. Those are kind of the low-hanging fruit. But we're always looking for new angles that we can serve up to the editors and writers and bloggers that we work with. And our goals for placing stories on New Orleans go up every year. And last year, we placed more than 2,000 positive stories on visitation to New Orleans, from festivals to cruising.
To everything.
Yeah. So when you couple the earned media outreach that our team is doing with the paid media outreach that Mark Romig and New Orleans Tourism Marketing Corporation is doing, and then our shared media, that you're hitting them with earned, owned, shared media, that's a steady drumbeat of exposure to New Orleans. And our goal is to make sure that if you're considering visiting, whether it's for business or pleasure, you can't avoid considering New Orleans.
Got it. You guys, we got about a minute and a half left before we close out the radio portion of the show. Christian, tell people where they can find out more about New Orleans and company and what you all offer.
NewOrleans.com.
Okay, that's pretty easy. Straightforward. Keep that simple. You save me a lot of time. Emily, how about French Quarter Festival?
FrenchQuarterFest.org.
Man, you guys are just succinct. Cleveland. You got a longer answer?
FryChickenFestival.com, and we'll see everyone this September, September 21st and 22nd, potentially 20 through 22nd.
Okay, great. And you'll keep a surprise to that if you have that
absolutely
extra day and all that. You guys are sticking around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. I'm going to get a little more into the weeds with them. Emily, what are the dates for next year? Do you have them yet?
Yes, we'll be here April 2nd through the 5th.
Excellent.
2020.
Perfect. Thank you so much. The three of you, I really appreciate you being here. We're going to sign off the portion of the radio show, as I said, but you guys are sticking around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. So if you're not getting the podcast, friends, go to NOLADrinks.com. You'll find it there. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, two or three others. So I do appreciate you, friends, listening into the show, as always, this week. So remember, be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all. Another shot with NOLA Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for sticking around, friends. I hope you're getting some from this conversation here. We wanted to do the show as we are in festival season, as we noted, but kind of bring it to you from maybe a bit of a different angle. Not just sort of talking about here's this festival and here's that festival, but kind of get to some of the underlying issues, considerations, talk about economy, talk about tourism, talk about the cultural import of these festivals, because it really is something that's important on many levels here. As we're chatting about, we're going to bounce right back over to Sylvain and continue our chat with those three, and then I will be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody. Yep. Another shot with NOLA Drinks. Thanks for sticking around. We are here at Sylvain, one of our favorite spots, 625 Charter Street, right here in the French Quarter, about a half a block off Jackson Square. And we are talking festivals with Emily from French Quarter Festival, Christian from New Orleans and Company, and Cleveland from the National Fried Chicken Festival. Thanks, y'all, for being here. Really some great insights, you guys. And we were talking about stuff during the breaks and somewhat on the air. One of the points that I thought really interesting is you guys were talking about, like, a lot of the things that people don't see are what makes a successful festival. And Emily, you said if they're not working, that's when people see them. But the other point then I think that comes in, I'll ask the question this way, because people will say, I've heard this 100 times when it comes to French Quarter Festival, they'll say, well, why don't there's more people, why don't they add more stages? And I tell people, stages cost money, and it's a free festival, right? That infrastructure, you can't just keep, one, we're running out of streets in French Quarter for y'all, but but two, you know, that's a lot of stuff that I think people don't realize, that all the stuff that has to go on there. So how do you kind of grapple with that constant growth? I know we've touched on it a little bit, but you got to ask yourself some of these questions, right?
Sure, moving absolutely. Forward. I mean, I think, you know, the old iceberg is a great example to visualize that. You know, the tip of the iceberg are the really visible things that you can see, like the stages. And of course, that's the most fun. That's the sexy part. Those are the stages and the musicians on those stages and the food booths. And we love that. But really the foundation and the iceberg holding it all up is all the really unsexy things like sanitation and bathrooms and security and fire patrol and police. And so those are things that are critical to make everything flow and to keep people mm-hmm. moving and the whole festival flowing and safe, of course. But you really only notice those things if there's a breakdown and they're not working. And there's an incredible amount of resources and timing and planning that go, and just sheer coordination and sheer number of people that go into making those types of things work.
Mm-hmm. Now, Cleveland, in your case, if you mentioned that you're looking at adding a third day to the festival, that's not something to be taken lightly, is it?
No, it's a pretty substantial kind of undertaking from a planning and human resources perspective, as well as financial resources perspective. It's been at least a 6-month process just to make the decision. You have to speak with vendors and sponsors and your venue and your team and staff who puts it all together to find out everyone's willingness to do it. Our sponsors are going to be able to help support the growth. So it's a big process. There's a lot of factors that go into it before you can make a decision like that. And it's not something that's taken lightly. You know, to add another day is a pretty substantial investment. It's another day of NOPD details and fire watch and security, and you have to have musicians to perform for that additional day. So it's a lot that goes into it.
Got it. Well, and any of you all feel free to answer this question, something that we talked about as well. I like what you said, Emily, about how we maybe focus a little too much on the number of attendees at a festival. But really, it's, as you said, it's making the economics and maybe more importantly, making the experience work, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, what I found most impressive about this year's festival, our 36th annual festival that we're just recovering from, was, you know, we had 825,000 people out there over the course of 4 days. And what I found most impressive about that was not that sheer number, but that it felt like a really wonderful experience. So if you're walking through the French Quarter, it didn't feel overcrowded. It didn't feel claustrophobic. You know, there wasn't trash everywhere. Mm-hmm. There weren't lines to go to the bathroom. So those are the things. And maybe that's just looking through the lens from a producer perspective. But we want people to come out here, and it should be as frictionless as possible, right? You're here to celebrate the music and to eat some good food and to hang out with friends and family, and we want that to be a good time. So if time and energy is spent on the things, like we said, that, you know, we want to be invisible, like sanitation and security
right,
and just getting around from place to place, well, then that's not as fun. So what was wonderful about that, and what we think about a lot when we think about stage placement, for example, is not just adding a stage or adding acts, but where and how we do that and how does the flow work. So, you know, we don't want to flood everyone into the streets of the French Quarter at one time, for example, or everyone out to the riverfront at one time, because, you know, that does get claustrophobic. So Greg Schatz, who's an excellent musician and he curates our lineup with our entertainment committee, really looks at, you know, what music is playing against what sets throughout the festival so that we have a really good movement and flow of people. We think really thoughtfully about the type of acts that we have. In other words, you know, even if we could pay for the Stones to be out there, it's all Louisiana musicians, so that wouldn't work. But just leveraging that as an example, you know, a huge crowd isn't necessarily what we're looking for. Exactly. You know, we would rather invest across the board in musicians that maybe sort of established, but in that sort of middle zone, and up-and-coming musicians to be able to offer a platform to showcase them, because those are sort of the wonderful moments where people are discovering artists that they might never have sought out, so that they get to learn and experience something new. But also that's a really important way that we just control the experience for folks and make sure that it's comfortable.
Gotcha. You know, one of the things, and Emily, you know this, listeners probably know this too, we've been doing a French Quarter Festival series with you all where local musicians that perform at the festival have come on the show, and we talk about music and food and drink and so on, and we do that with our other partner in this endeavor, Louisiana Music Factory over there on Frenchman. So we've been talking a lot about the festival. One of the things I always tell people, I'm borrowing a phrase from probably a mutual friend of ours, Caroline Rosen, who runs Tales of the Cocktail, and she said to me before Mardi Gras, if you've planned more than two things on Mardi Gras Day, you've planned too much. Mm-hmm. And I tell the same thing about festivals, and yours in particular, and even really others. It's like, I'm not going to Cleveland go to your festival and say, I'm going to go eat this chicken here and this chicken mm-hmm. here and this chicken here, because part of the joy is just stumbling upon mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We invite folks to come out, and kind of like the tourism slogan that New Orleans had for a couple of years, kind of like follow your NOLA. Just kind of go out and just expect to have a good time and be open to whatever is presented in front of you. And that's when you have the best time. I think I have some that me and my friends have. I think some of the best nights of my life, some of the best weekends of my life, are the ones when we started without a plan. Hey, let's meet up after work Friday, and we'll figure the rest out from there. Yeah. And then next thing you know, it's Saturday morning.
Right, there you go. That's it. Well, Christian, I like the term because I had not heard that one before, need periods. Mm-hmm. Which sounds way better than like the slow death march to August that we're on now with right. the weather. But as we are moving into that period, and let me phrase it, maybe ask this a two-pronged question. We have 140 festivals. That's a lot of festivals. Some of these have to happen in the need season mm-hmm. or need period, need time. How are you guys working through? I mean, how do you guys kind of tackle this season? I mean, I know, and we've got Satchmo Fest at French Quarter Fest does coming up in August. Yeah. That's brave. Mm-hmm. I love the festival. It's great, but it's brave, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you guys tackle some of this stuff?
Well, there are some programs that we can offer. I mentioned culinary on the radio program. Mm-hmm. Culinary was started about 15 years ago, and it's reached a maturation level now where restaurateurs they really look forward to it because they see a positive impact. They see more traffic to their restaurants because of it. And then people, not just in New Orleans, but around the state and the Gulf Coast, look forward to visiting New Orleans in the month of August. And in addition to culinary, which is throughout the month of August, there is a Be a Tourist campaign, another campaign that we promote.
Be a Tourist in your hometown, right?
Yeah. Touristathome.com is where you can find all these deals. But Be a Tourist, that campaign goes from August through September. So in addition to dining and cocktailing options that are, I don't want to call them discounted, they're offered at affordable rates, but you're not giving up anything on the quality. So we don't like to use the word discounts. Mm-hmm. They're very affordably
nice
priced.
Fixed menu, yeah.
Yeah. But in addition to the dining and cocktail options, you can find very affordable museum visit packages. You can find very affordable weekend stays at hotels. Basically, if you're a resident or you can drive in from the Gulf Coast or from another city in New Orleans, you can have the most affordable visit to New Orleans that you could have in the months of August and September.
Great. Emily, Cleveland, please.
So I wanted to add to something that Christian said about need periods. The very first year of the National Fried Chicken Festival, we did it in September, mm-hmm. and one of the takeaways was it was really hot. And we immediately thought about moving the festival to October. And I'm debriefing with everyone who supported us. I was in a meeting with Mark Romick. I told Mark, I'm pretty sure we're going to move it to October. And Mark Romick, who is Christian's counterpart in New Orleans Tourism, Mark said, please don't. And our company works with New Orleans Tourism and with New Orleans & Co. So we understand the need period. And Mark Romick said, you know, please don't move it to October. Keep it in September because of the need period and things like that. And then if you think about kind of what we said our mission was at the beginning, one, bringing people together around love for food and music, but also contributing to the economy and economic impact. Back in 2016, when we first created the festival, I said, if that's really our goal, then keeping it in that need period is part of our core mission. So that's actually how we made the decision to not move the festival to October and keep it in September to help support the need period of the city.
Mm-hmm. And just to back it all the way up, 15 years ago when this thing was started, culinary that is, there were restaurants and other businesses that in those need period months, July, August, September, they closed.
Right.
So right. People got laid off. They had to find other jobs. Mm-hmm. Doors were locked. I mean, that's not good for an economy. You need certainty. You need so all these need period offerings and promotions were a way to spread out everything that you could come and do in New Orleans and make sure that all of our members, all of our businesses in the city could remain open 12 months a year and maintain their staff 12 months a year.
I really appreciate you making that point, Christian. I think a lot of people don't realize how cyclical this town. We are very much a seasonal town. It's like almost like a ski town in the inverse, yeah, in a sense. And, you know, we need, and the thing I like about culinary, where you can go new restaurants, well-established Grand Dame restaurants here in the French Quarter, it's a great opportunity for locals to get out and go check out some of these places. And that's who keeps these places in business through the need periods.
That's right. And I mean, last year we had a record number of restaurants participating, 124.
Yeah.
And it's not crowded. It's enough. It's a nice equilibrium. It's enough to make sure that our restaurants aren't suffering in August and September, but locals can go out and not be just overrun with tourists. Mm-hmm. It's a nice time to go out.
I love it. I mean, it actually kind of reminds me of both French Quarter Festival, National Fried Chicken Festival. There's always stuff I leave on the table because I want to go here, I want to go here, I want to go hear that band, go hear that band. I want to go try that fried chicken, I want to go try that fried chicken. And it's just there's so many choices that you do kind of, as you were saying, like if you go to a festival, you've left two behind.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any other, I would like you to tell people where they can connect with you again, but any final thoughts or anything that anybody wants to add?
Well, I'd love to invite everybody. Speaking of need periods, you mentioned Sachmo Summerfest.
Definitely.
And, you know, that's another event that we do specifically to honor the life and legacy and music of Louis Armstrong in his birthplace here in New Orleans. But August 2nd through the 4th this year, so certainly in the heat of the summer. But what I love about that festival, it takes place at the Jazz Museum at the Mint. We've got two outdoor stages. It's not only traditional jazz and modern jazz, but a lot of the brass music and modern New Orleans music that has been inspired by Louis Armstrong.
And that's a wide net right there that you just said.
It is a very, it's a very wide net. So we've got great food, and we have an indoor stage where we bring in scholars from around New Orleans and around the world to speak about his life and his legacy. But I love that festival because it is unique, and it is a boutique event. So we run a really big festival, and that's wonderful. And Sachmo Summerfest is a little bit like a family reunion. In fact, I think we had about three family reunions out there last year. Everybody had folks out with their T-shirts and celebrating. But it's much more low-key and laid-back, and it's a great way for folks to come out and enjoy all that New Orleans has to offer with a little less competition.
Yeah. and pavilion tents and misters, I will add, which is...
We got lots of shade and misters.
We got lots of
absolutely
shade and...
Praise God.
That's it.
But shade and misters.
That was a great addition in recent years, was that. Emily, tell people the website again.
Sure,
they can
you can get more information at www.sachmosummerfest.org, and of course you can go to fqfi.org, that's French Quarter Festival Inc.org, to learn more information about all of those events.
Awesome. And Cleveland, one more time about the French Chicken
Festival. We're online at friedchickenfestival.com. We'll be having our fourth annual this September, September 21st and 22nd. We invite everyone to come out, and then they can connect with us year-round on social media and Instagram at friedchickenfest. And we look forward to seeing everyone out there this September.
Great. Perfect. And one last time, Christian, how do we connect with New Orleans and
Company?
Well,
attend a festival.
Attend a festival. That's a good...
But when you're looking for things to do in the hot summer months, go to touristathome.com.
Perfect.
Find some really good deals there.
And NewOrleans.com.
NewOrleans.com.
A lot of listeners outside the area, so that's for people looking to do family reunions and people looking to do stuff like that, that's a good gateway to find stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. I really appreciate it. Friends, as always, I wanted to mention, which I believe I did at the top of the show, a little programming note. We are actually taking next week off. We do that once in a great while, not too often. But yeah, just take a little breather.
on the NOLA Drink Show. But don't fear, we'll be back in a couple weeks. It'll be a little less than that when you're hearing this, with a brand new show and a little bit of important news tied to what that show's all about. We've got a new series coming for you that we are very, very excited about, and we'll talk about it then. So be there on the week of the 20th, I believe that is. A very important show coming up here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, wanted to note one thing real quick here, too, before we get into the parting shot. Just after we recorded this episode, the featured interview portion of things, the Lieutenant Governor's office here in Louisiana, who is charged with the tourism program in the state, released the 2018 numbers. So very quickly, Louisiana attracted a record 51.3 million visitors in 2018. That's up 9% from last year. Visitors spent $18.8 billion, an increase of 7% from 2017, and the travel and tourism industry last year generated $1.9 billion in state and local tax revenue. Some 237,200 jobs were the result of visitor spending in Louisiana last year. That's an increase of 2,600 new tourism-related jobs over 2017, and since 2016, a total of 6,700 new tourism-related jobs have been added statewide. So there you go, some pretty good news in general on the tourism front. But here on our parting shot, some news if you're in the area you may have heard. We used to have two newspapers, and now we have one. The New Orleans Advocate Group, which owns the New Orleans Advocate, bought the Times-Picayune. Somewhat stunning, maybe. I know I was surprised to hear it, but when we consider all the media mergers and some of the other things that have gone on really nationally as well as locally, maybe it's really not so surprising when you think about it. But the Times-Picayune has been around for over 182 years. Yep, a long time. And they were purchased a handful of years ago by a group called Advance Local. They made some pretty radical changes. They went took the paper down from being a daily to just 3 days a week. They do have the NOLA.com website, which they sort of emphasized a lot more in digital publication and that sort of thing, which, you know, makes sense. When that occurred, The Advocate, which was based out of Baton Rouge, their main paper there, and they had been around for over 100 years in Baton Rouge, they swooped in and established the New Orleans Advocate. And they started publishing every day. They invested, you know, in a daily paper here. Now, there was some joint statements made by Advance Local as John and Daffel Georges, who own The Advocate and now own the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. And, you know, a lot of patting on the back, and it's a great day and it's a good day for journalism and we'll keep things intact and so on and so forth. And that's all fine and good. And let me be clear. I mean, The Advocate's done some really good things. They won a Pulitzer, the first apparently in the history of the newspaper for local reporting. They hired a lot of folks from the Times-Picayune and from NOLA.com when they established the New Orleans paper here. They invested in an old building, fixed it up. They have something like 110, coming into this anyway, 110 employees, which for a local newspaper in a city of this size is actually a pretty big number. It's a lot of jobs. They do say that they are going to try and hire from within. All of the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com staff, from my understanding, was laid off. And then they have to reapply for jobs, but they say that they're going to emphasize that pool. But I mean, here's kind of, you know, it's troubling on a lot of levels. One, I can't imagine that everybody is going to be rehired. And kind of focusing on the food and drink and culture thing that we do here, not talking about, you know, to a certain degree anyway, all the ramifications that this may have in other areas. But we can use this as an example because I think it applies. You know, three food writers at the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com, Ann Maloney and Todd Price, who have both been on the show and I know, and Brent Anderson, whom I don't know, but been around for a long time on the scene. They're out of a job and have to reapply. Now, our good friend and friend of the show, Ian McNulty, who is the food and restaurant writer for The Advocate, great guy, very prolific to say the least. I'm assuming he's going to need some help, but we'll see what that actually means for Brent and Ann and Todd and everybody else, of course, at the paper. And, you know, emphasizing what we talk about on this show, again, using that as a bit of an example, drink, food, and culture. It's a big landscape here in New Orleans. I don't need to tell you that. That's why you listen to this show, probably, because there's a lot to cover. There's a lot to talk about. I'm not so sure that one newspaper and simply one writer can handle it all. No knock on Ian, of course. He does a great job. And as I said, he's very prolific. But it's a big, big landscape to cover when we think about the number of restaurants we have, the openings and closings that we constantly have, all the personalities, the trends, so on and so forth. And I think when you throw in other considerations where we're starting to talk more broadly about issues in the hospitality, food and drink industries here, tourism industry, even really in New Orleans, when we talk about things like sexual harassment, when we talk about things like personal wellness, substance abuse, these sorts of things in these operations, we're really starting to scratch the surface of these conversations in the broader media and broader reporting. Proud to say that we've been talking about that for quite a while on this show, but we're starting to see more of that even bigger landscape under that umbrella of food and restaurant and drink stuff in a newspaper. So I am concerned about this. I'm concerned that, you know, frankly, it's going to be too big to cover. I don't know who they're going to hire, who they're going to bring back in. Maybe they bring all three of those from TimesPicayuneNOLA.com back in. We will have to see how this plays out. We'll have to see how the advocate goes about hiring and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm going to reserve judgment to a degree here. But the one thing I'll say as it relates to the landscape that we discuss here on this show, as well as really anything else when it comes to reporting news, fewer voices, probably not a good thing. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.